welcome to another edition of the Not So Region podcast. I am your host, Dan Reardon. I'm the night editor here at the Times in Northwest Indiana. And joined by me, as always, are...
I'm Laura Lane, the Times Digital News Director, and I'm happy to actually be at the office for once because I've been missing in action working from the Lane Bureau for the last forever.
And our rock of Gibraltar, one...
Joseph Pete, intrepid reporter, polar vortex survivor, and national parks appreciator and goer too.
And what a segue, because it has been a week news wise, and we had a list of subjects we were talking about discussing, and then that kind of got all thrown out the window with today's news that as part of the omnibus spending bill signed by President Donald Trump. Indiana has its first national park, and that national park is in Indiana. Joseph, give us the skinny.
The Indiana Dunes National Park, or National Lakeshore in Chesterton, which is separate from the neighboring Indiana State Park, and that's not changing. It is now the 1,500-acre site, which is one of the most ecologically diverse sites in the world, in terms of number of plants and flora and fauna and so forth, is now going to be America's 61st national park, which is, it's basically a change in name, which from National Lakeshore to National Park, it's still going to be run by the National Park Service. There's not any change in funding, but the big difference is the brand, because you have national parks are very much celebrated nationally. Some states base their entire tourism campaign, like Utah and Montana, basically on visiting these parks. They've been celebrated in like Ken Burns's documentary, National Parks, America's Best Idea on PBS. It's a very well-known brand. It's on many people's bucket lists. It's a huge tourist thing, and the hope is this will be a big boost to tourism locally. The Indiana Dunes are already the state's top tourist attraction. They had 3.6 million visitors in 2017. It kind of flip-flops a little bit with Brown County, but this is expected to take it to a whole nother level, and you might see more visitors coming in from Chicago. Because they get a lot of international visitors, they might make more day trips here,
right.
More people coming in from all over, because most of these parks are out west, and this will be also be one of the few in the Midwest for people to enjoy. But the Spiros Spatostatos with the Lakeshore Chamber was saying there's a lot of power to words, and it seems like a small change. It only is one word, but like the national park just has so much cachet, and people don't like appreciate a national lakeshore or a national monument or a national heritage site in the same way. That one little word, park, just means a huge difference as far as, you know, people wanting to go.
Right. And so we typically avoid politics and things like that, heavier subjects, but just so we sort of can explain the mechanics of it, basically, as far as I can understand, this is sort of folded in to the contentious sort of border wall funding. So as part of the bill that President Trump signed to sort of keep the government open and running and also give him money for his much-desired border wall along the southern border, that this designation... So I would think, without jumping to too many conclusions, that someone like U.S. Rep. Pete Visklosky might deserve a lot of credit in this, sort of his maneuvering and things like that.
Yes, Pete Visklosky is the one who's championed this from the start. He was the original, like, legislative... But he has always done a decent job of partnering, like going across the aisle and just trying to get stuff done.
Right.
And pretty much all of Indiana's congressional delegation, which is mostly Republican, has been on board with this. This is a bipartisan thing. Everybody agrees is kind of a win-win for Northwest Indiana and the state. And but this is a common legislative tactic. Obviously, some people are going to have, you know, moral reservations about the border wall and everything.
Right.
But this is a common legislative tactic. Anytime you know that something is going to pass, that's a good opportunity, and going to be signed into law, that is a very good opportunity to sneak your local issue in and get it
jam
signed.
As much stuff in there.
Piggybacked off of a big
it's
thing and get it
done,
in there.
Yeah, sorry. It's been done by Congress for years, and that's basically what happened here, it looks like, because this was basically a must-pass bill to avoid another government shutdown. So Visklosky tried unsuccessfully to get this done last year, and I think he saw an opportunity, and then...
he went with it.
Yeah, went with it, and you know, speaking about bipartisanship, you know, Senator Todd Young from Indiana, you know, did credit Visklosky for what he called his tireless advocacy. So, you know, it's nice to see whatever your politics are, it is nice to see both sides of the aisle work together for some sort of common good for our state. So One sort of procedural thing.
This isn't a partisan issue, too.
No.
Is, yeah.
But that, and that's the thing. These are the things that people, you know, this is something that can really benefit our region. Politics sort of don't really need to be even factored into this.
And not everything has to be about politics. I just want to state that.
Yeah. It's going to be an awesome thing for the region.
Yeah. And one sort of procedural thing is, I guess part of the legislation renames the Miller Woods Trail to the Paul H. Douglas Trail. He's a former U.S. Illinois U.S. senator who helped establish the lakeshore back in '66. So,
and the Environmental Education Center in Miller is also named after him.
Yeah, and this is, you know, reading this story, and a great job by our State House reporter Dan Carden for getting this out there. You know, this has been in the works literally for more than 100 years.
Yeah.
I didn't realize. I mean, this has been something in ebbs and flows in terms of trying to make this happen, but. Joseph, can you provide any context? I mean, this is not a new thing.
Yes, the original superintendent of the National Park Service had originally wanted the National Lakeshore or the Indiana Dunes to be one of the first state parks, and to be one of the first state parks, but it never kind of came to pass. But the thing is, you had some critics, including a Notre Dame professor from who wrote an editorial for the Chicago Tribune, were kind of claiming that, like, back in the day when he did it, there used to be the dunes were way bigger. They were like some of them were like 100 feet tall. One of the most popular tourist attractions in the state was the Hoosier Slide, which was like 100 foot tall, like a Mount Baldy like mountain, and people would come in from Chicago and all over to climb up and slide down. And but basically a lot of the dunes were sadly mined for sand. It went it was used a lot in Chicago. It was used a lot for glass making by the Ball Company in Muncie in particular. So, like, the dunes that existed 100 years ago were a far more wild, crazy place than they are. They're a little bit more tame today. But you still have, obviously, sweeping vistas. You still have,
the biological diversity. I mean, there's a lot of things going on there.
Absolutely. It's been called, like, the Everglades of the North. There's, like, so many different plants and animals that you don't see because it's a very unique unique area ecologically. It's been called the birthplace of ecology too, because it's where the first professor from the University of Chicago started cataloging different plants. And
I feel like people who are going to be coming in to visit, tourists and what have you, they're not going to realize how vast the dunes are. I mean, I always enjoyed going there. We'd always do it as a school field trip at the end of the year if you were well behaved. It was like a big deal for us to go hang out at the dunes. And I mean, even if the dunes aren't as enormous as they were 100 years ago, it's still a sight to behold. And there's so much to do. You can go hiking. You can hang out on the beach.
Yeah,
so.
It's definitely a proud day for the region, and it's something that we should be proud of. We're first in national parks in the state. Conversely, we're also probably first in corrupt or convicted politicians.
That was quite a segue. I'm going to induct that into the Segue Hall of Fame for that region.
I am raising my fists above my head currently in self-congratulation. The big story yesterday, Thursday, February 14th, Valentine's Day, and to show up perpetually single, I am, I thought February 13th was Valentine's Day, but that is neither here nor there. After 3 weeks and not that long a deliberation, actually, I think in total less maybe 10 hours or so, a jury of 12 citizens decided that now former Portage Mayor James Snyder was guilty in his public corruption trial. It was over at the Hammond Federal Courthouse. He's convicted of two felonies, bribery and then a sort of a tax-related felony. He was acquitted on a third bribery charge, which, credit to former Mayor Snyder, an eternal optimist, he noted the acquittal in his comments to the media afterwards. So now Sue Lynch is the city's new mayor. Joseph, on the Mount Rushmore of disgraced politicians, does James Snyder get on that Mount Rushmore?
Perhaps recently, but there are so many contenders over the years.
Right. It's like picking children.
We have a whole list on NWI.com.
Yeah, I was going to segue
our
that.
Our beloved Bill Dolan has put together and labored over. So,
Personally, I would have to go with Robert Battle just because to have been arrested for alleged murder of someone during a drug deal gone wrong, and then managing to get reelected
while serving
on the council while in jail. I think that is quite a feat. So I don't know. That one is hard to top, but you've had politicians who have, like, run off to Greece and never come back. You've had all kinds of...
wearing Skeletor masks.
It puts Chicago politics and Illinois politics to shame.
Yeah, I mean, it is mind-blowing that it continues to happen. There's thoughts that there may be more shoes to drop still on this. We don't know.
That's how it works usually, though. Like, you know, they get in this case, his own brother testified against him, who's also an elected official.
Yeah,
in
biblical.
Porter County,
this had a nice biblical sort of
wore a wire on. But it's we've often discussed on this podcast how there's a mural in the Port of Applebee's depicting a giant James Snyder, and it kind of seemed prescient, you know, like
right.
It was Nostradamus almost. The other day, because it's him being surrounded by four police officers by a Portage police car. But now if you look at it, it looks like his hands are positioned in a way that it looks like he's being handcuffed and
right.
like put into the car.
It's all about perspective. I think of the classic Ghostbusters 2 where the painting, his expression changes. So I think at first it was more, if you saw that mural at the Applebee's, you thought, oh, it's him standing in solidarity with police officers in the city, and now it's like, oh, now it looks like they're about to just throw him in the clink for the next 8 to 10 years. So,
who knows what it'll transform into next?
Well, you know, so
the two crimes they did end up convicting him on were one was creating a shell company so he could avoid paying taxes on his like personal mortgage business, which was unrelated to his public office. But he was convicted of accepting a $13,000 bribe in exchange for $1.25 million in garbage contracts. And he was optimistic, glass half full kind of guy, it seems like, on being acquitted of accepting a lesser $12,000 bribe in exchange for towing contracts. But that's how this whole thing started. The whole thing started with the Buncitch towing bribery investigations, and then they flipped like one of the towing drivers, and then it came to light. So that's how he ended up here in the first place. But he's managed to, like, usually these go a lot quicker. He's managed to avoid getting convicted for quite some time. And he had already announced he wasn't running again for another term, but now he doesn't have that option.
We were waiting on that, too, the deadline day, to see if he was going to figure out a way to, you know, skip court for a little bit.
What I'm interested about is we had a story earlier this week about him. He was scheduled to be a speaker at some sort of Chamber of Commerce event. I got to imagine they got to find someone else for this one.
They probably canceled that event.
unless that's, you know,
how to
make a shiv out of a toothbrush or something like that. So we don't make light of the fact, you know, it's just that it really what it is just, it's like as constant as gravity. I mean, the region has just had so many corrupt politicians that have been convicted in a court of law for things that you would think at some point the worm is going to turn, won't it? I mean, I feel like we as a newspaper are taking a pretty hardline stance against public corruption in all forms. Do you feel like this is a trend that just will always continue, or do you think that the region will turn things around, Joseph?
I'm hopeful the region will turn things around because you don't have as much of the region's gotten more suburban, and you don't have a lot of this was a kind of a relic of the old machine politics in urban areas, and you don't have figures like Pasterick in East Chicago anymore. Like I see it changing, but you still, it's like Snyder is also Republican. This has been a bipartisan thing in the region.
Once again,
you did see Keith Sunderquist in Lake Station. He ended up running for re-election even when he was facing charges for like stealing from the food pantry to go gamble at a casino, and he lost in the primary. But like you often, some of these politicians are so bold that not only when they're facing like federal charges, they'll even run for re-election.
Right,
but
sociopath nature.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think my favorite thing about Battle, though, to circle back to him, Wasn't there talk, or like didn't they want to see if they could have him call into the meetings from county?
Yes.
Originally, they wanted to do like a video thing, like a Skype setup.
Right.
Originally, they couldn't get him out of office, so they were trying to figure out how he could participate in the council meetings though he was in jail. And there were even like ridiculous arguments, like, well, his constituents could still go meet with him in jail to like bring up their concerns, as though that's like a normal state of affairs.
Just envisioning him on one side of the glass wall, the other person there on their phones talking.
Well, I mean, to be fair, I mean, you know, in one way, at least you always know where your politician is.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
I mean, so
you know where to find him.
to me, one of the most interesting things, though, is the state law was brought about by the region that if you get convicted of a felony,
right,
you have to, because there was a previous politician who tried to stay on and draw a salary after he was convicted, and it forced the state lawmakers he was waiting until his actual sentencing. And it forced them to change the law, so now you're automatically removed from office if you are convicted of a felony. But it's like, they always say, like, if there's a sign not to do something, there's a reason for that. And in this case, it was the region. But I do see, I mean, I might be naive, but I think, you know, there's still a lot of this going on. But I think it's, like, on the wane, and it's only going to get more, it's only going to decline more and more. It's been aggressively prosecuted by the U.S. District Attorney of the Northern District of Hammond in Indiana for years. Eventually, you know, they stomped out the mafia eventually. It just takes a while.
Yeah, and
you know,
I think you're right.
You can't do it overnight.
And you're right, Joseph. I think part of it, too, there's no more of these sort of outsized political figures who not only have outsized personalities but also outsized power and scope as well, that the sort of, you know, the machine politics. I mean, even in Chicago, you could argue that the machine politics aren't as powerful as they once were.
Absolutely.
For sure.
You have most of the mayoral candidates running now are basically running, at least in words rather than action, as anti-machine politicians. So I think you're right. I think in some ways it may be a relic of the past, but
people are getting fed up with it.
Yeah.
What it is.
Well, it's still going on, but I just think you're seeing it start to fade, and it's eventually going to have to fade out. Because, I mean, at this point, with how many of these people get caught, you'd have to be pretty dumb to even, like, you know. But a lot of it, though, is you still see a lot of people running for office where they're just kind of looking to line their own pockets versus.
Right.
Yeah.
And they might be doing it in an above board legal way, but it's still kind of questionable.
They're not doing it
to
make their community better.
Well, I think Laura used the optimum word. I think it's just sociopathic behavior. So to think that you can do that, I think, is telling. I don't know if there will be a moment of silence for James Snyder and the other convicted politicians at 219 Day tomorrow, February 16th. But 219 Day returns. It's at the Hammock Civic Center Saturday, February 16th, from 6 to 11 p.m. Joseph, you are all things region, all things 219. What can people expect at this event?
Yes, it's the fourth year that Hammond is throwing what they're calling the region's greatest party at the Hammond Civic Center. It was technically invented about 5 years ago by the Twitter humorist Region Rat Rants, where they're like, you know, February 19th or 219, the 219 area code, should be used to celebrate all things region. It's kind of used as a way to poke fun at like region stereotypes, you know, that we kind of like embrace in a joking fashion. And it's a big festival. A few thousand people go every year. They have things like a region rat pinata where they smash it open. But they have a wide variety of local craft beer. They have local food vendors. They have signs, whiteboards posted all throughout the Civic Center where you can write, you know, you're from the region if,
right,
you know, like, you know. And you have the opportunity to come up with your best, like, region jokes or just trying to prove your region street cred and authenticity. But this year it's going to be a region Oscars theme. They're going to give out awards for, like, region rat of the year, most likely to wear shorts in winter, most likely to get, like, a region tattoo, like, things of that nature. It's all kind of joking and, in, you know, like a wacky kind of pierogi fest kind of thing. But they're talking about having, like, spotlights outside of the Civic Center and, like, Oscar statuettes with a region rat head and things of
carpet.
That nature. Yeah, absolutely.
More like the, maybe instead of a red carpet, maybe it's more like a brown shag carpet.
Yes, yes.
That it might still be in some homes in Hessville and other areas.
It's a fun time, though. Last year they did a Seinfeldian, like, feats of strength kind of thing with a mechanical bull, and they try to change it up every year. They've had fireworks and But, you know, it's cold outside, and it's just a fun indoor party.
Well, I don't know if it's been decided already, and I don't know if the powers that be will hear this, but I hereby nominate one Joseph S. Pete as Region Rat of the Year.
I second this. Yeah, I endorse this message.
Mayor McDermott, if you're listening, or whoever else, you know, make it happen. Do right. Do right by Joseph. Well,
it's an honor just to be nominated.
I can't wait.
My wife and I make that joke a lot.
I just hope that if Joseph wins, he doesn't use his speech time to, like, you know, advance some sort of political agenda or something.
I do want to give a brief shout out to my wife, because I did actually propose to her at the Indiana Dunes National Lakeshore, which is now a national park.
Oh, wow. I thought you were going to say you would propose her at 219 Day.
I thought so, too.
Sorry. No, I probably should have got that in earlier.
Or at the Portage Applebee's.
But now it's like another level of, I don't know, whatever.
Well, yeah, and
we were thinking about the Portage Applebee's, but just James Snyder watching over.
Yeah,
us.
Exactly. Yeah, it would have been an unholy union. So, or you know, I would also nominate Joseph's much better half.
Yes, Meredith, much better is the operative.
As Region Rat of the Year as well. You know, you're from the region. What is one of your favorite?
My favorite one is you get stuck at one train. The crossing, only to get stuck by the same train
at a different crossing.
Yes. 2 miles away. Happened to me last week. Happens to me every week, really.
Oh, I forget. We've done slideshows in the past. We'll be posting them again online soon. Look for all the funny stuff people wrote. But one was one that I've always liked, and I don't remember if this was posted last year, but I was once going to the South Shore line to go to Chicago or whatever. I forget why, like a concert or something. And it was, but I got caught by like two trains on the way to going to my train, and ended up being late from the train and having to drive into the city and pay for parking and everything.
Also, the story of my life when I was in college.
So this was sort of for lack of a better word, of an emergency podcast today in terms of the fact that I had a lot of breaking news. It's been a crazy news week. Make sure to check it all out at NWI.com. Make sure to pick up that print copy. If you want. So we have kind of a hard out today, so I'm going to go ahead and cede my time for suggestions. Laura, would you be able to cede your time as well?
Sure.
And we'll just give it straight to Joseph minute of suggestions.
Okay, yeah, no, I'll keep it brief. I don't have that much this week. But 219 Day is Saturday. A lot of people, some people will listen to this later, but so I'm going to suggest some ongoing stuff that's going on. They're at the South Shore Convention and Visitors Bureau. They are doing an exhibit called Haunts, which is some absolutely beautiful, like, abandoned, vacant buildings in Gary and across the Midwest. You have things like abandoned prisons, like abandoned hotels. Like, there's a beautiful picture of, like, this couch in an old Packard factory in Detroit where the wall's gone, and it just opens up to this big, bright blue sky. And it's by a lot of, like, local urban explorers and photographers. It's great. It's a free exhibit. Then the Indie Windy one that had been there previously, celebrating local graffiti artists, including the crazy Indiana-style artist who had worked with Keith Haring briefly on a mural in Chicago. Like, that exhibit opens Friday at the Marshall J. Gardner Center for the Arts in Miller, which is a great little neighborhood. Many great fine dining options in there. Tacos and tequila, Miller Bakery Cafe. Just so much good food and art and culture there. And then I would also lastly recommend at the Indiana Welcome Center, I believe today, they're opening a new exhibit of local artists with based out of the Lubesnik Center at Michigan City. But they do a lot of, like, they do a lot of the big shows there, like the Christmas Story. But it's also like a venue where local artists can get a lot of exposure, reach, you know, wide audiences they might not otherwise, you know, see in smaller galleries. And so support your local artists. Go check that out. Go. It's a just beautiful building anyway. They have cool history history videos about, like, the Kankakee River and steel mills and all kinds of region history. So check out the Indiana Welcome Center.
All right. And we're going to call it a week. Thank you, as always, for listening. If you love something, let it go. And Joseph.
And whatever you do, keep it region.